We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Week 18, the finale, the conclusion, whatever you want to call it.
We made it!
The StackFest, Underworld StackFest, brought to you by Player Profiler here on RotoGrinders.com. We were talking a little bit before the show. Matt, I was blessed to be on one of Matt's shows earlier this week, and we briefly touched on this. Week 18 is usually one of my favorite slates, actually, because I'm one of those big sickos, and I thought it would be a pretty good slate for us to go out on here on this
chaos,
show, given
chaos mode.
Total chaos, lots of obscure names and random players that theoretically the people thinking like those that do on this show should be
not
able
so
to have
fast somewhat. Not so fast, Eric.
Everybody's playing to win. I was telling Dario before all these
teams that
should be resting guys. We were talking briefly about the Chargers before the show. It seems like they may not go the whole game, but they haven't technically said they're not going to rest. It feels like, Matt, to me, the weirdest kind of final, you know, week. I know we haven't had a lot of week 18s, but whether it was old week 17, it feels like one of the weirder ones where we, of course, have a couple spots where, you know, guys are resting, some decently fun backup running backs, but it feels closer to a normal slate than I was expecting for week 18. Yeah. Is that kind of how you're feeling too?
Definitely. Yeah. I mean, there's some interesting, there's teams that are playing for something in the playoffs, or teams that have been out of it for a long time and they've just been playing on pride and playing for the next contract for weeks, and some of them exceeding expectations. You know, the Rams, Panthers, the Falcons. Some of these lines you're thinking they're going to be bigger, but no, these teams have been playing spunky last few weeks.
Even the Texans, who just got, you know, their face beat in by the Jaguars, but for weeks before that, right, they take the Chiefs to overtime. They nearly beat the Cowboys. I hadn't even actually thought about that spin. The Panthers were a really good example of that, where these teams have been out of it. The Browns are kind of playing for next season, right? Well, Jadeveon Clowney is definitely playing for next season. He's gone out the door. But, you know, Deshaun Watson, it's not like they're going to rest him. He needs to play. And these guys that are going to be here next year need to play with Deshaun Watson. So we really have this limited amount of, like, I wanted the full-blown, you know, like, give me the backup quarterback stacks with, you know, like, give me some running cool backup quarterbacks that we just don't have, you know, against the Texans. We don't have a lot of that. So it does feel a little bit more like a normal StackFest show.
What do we have, like a Tyrod Taylor? Have. Is that all we got?
I think so. And the other thing is, you know, the Colts have packed it in a long time ago. We have Sam Ellinger as, I think, our top point per dollar projection. Again, he is facing the Texans. That's probably why. It's not a Sam Ellinger thing. It's the fact that he's facing the Texans. Skylar Thompson. Right, Ritter's been in there already for a couple of weeks. Like, Joe Flacco is our new week 18 quarterback. Like, Huntley's been playing. All these guys have been playing at quarterback. So
we
don't have a lot new.
We're very
familiar.
You mean
you guys aren't going to play Nathan Peterman?
Yeah, it's Peterman. Peterman and Flacco are the two Week 18 like substitute quarterbacks. So they're torturing us.
That's a bummer. Yeah, Peterman's a bummer.
But Dario, what do you think about, you know, I've got obviously your list of games here, and the majority of them are at a minimum one team really playing for something on one side, right? Mm-hmm. Is there any, like from a macro view before we dive into the first game, is there anything you're kind of just like that stuck out to you about this week in terms of could be motivational, could be, you know, one motivational team against a maybe non-motivational team? We got a couple of those. Just any kind of macro trend that you've had hanging over your head this week?
I think that's definitely the biggest one, kind of hinted at it. Like usually when I'm looking at the games for this show, it's like there's games where they're exciting on both offenses of the ball. Like we see it as like a pretty balanced game, has a total that's like, you know, at least 46 at the lowest, but like usually we like to see 48, 50. But this week it's a lot of like low 40s, over unders, and really one-sided games that are, you know, giving teams the highest implied point totals. Like we were talking, we have the Bills on the list, we have the Eagles on the list, we have the Niners and the Bengals on the list. These are all teams that, like, I mean, I don't know how many run backs we're going to talk about today, because I think a lot of these games you're stacking just purely one side of it. So I think you kind of hit the nail on the head with that point.
I didn't see on your list, I didn't see my Cowboys.
I think that they're
a lot of implied points there.
Motivation wise, I don't know what, I mean, I guess they're hoping the Eagles lose in order to have any shot at winning the division, but I think they're pretty locked in as the 5 seed. My guess is like if at halftime the Eagles are up 2 touchdowns and you're Mike McCarthy, why aren't you pulling your starters too?
That one's definitely tricky. That one's probably trickier than we can talk about some of these. You know, we're going to dive into these games, but we could probably talk about a couple of these. Like
Cooper
the
Rush
Chargers
has been good though,
and that is true. I would imagine
Cooper Rush for the second half.
not good, but like
good
for
enough.
A backup quarterback, good. Like not quite Jacoby Brissett, but like almost.
If he comes in and you have Dalton Schultz or something, and assuming Dalton, I think the concern is like, well, that now CeeDee's not going to play also, right? I think that would be the concern. Perfect week to get Jalen Tolbert some snaps, for Christ's sake. You know, the kid's been inactive all year, but I think
he's on so many
Cowboys,
of my best ball teams.
Yeah, what a my God, what a disaster. Him and Albert O been hanging out all year on the inactive list. The Chargers are another one that I think we should just briefly touch on, as opposed to a game stack, as a team who is a little bit similar to Dallas, except, you know, technically, right, Dallas doesn't know. They think going into their game they have a chance to get the bye. Now, they would need the Giants backups to beat the full-strength Eagles, which is probably not gonna happen, I think should be factored into that probability. But the Chargers are like, you know, they're not getting a bye. They're not winning the division. They can move up a seed or something, you know.
Yeah.
All the scenarios are kind of crazy, but generally speaking, they're pretty locked in, but they haven't said that they're like resting guys. Do you have any thoughts mm-hmm. on the Chargers, Dario?
So I think I'm pretty sure that the way it works for the Chargers is if the Ravens lose, the Chargers will be locked in as the 5 seed. So at that point, they would have nothing to play for. And if the Ravens win, then the Chargers have to win in order to stay the 5 seed. And keep in mind, the 5 seed is a pretty big advantage over the 6 seed in the AFC, because the 6 seed is going to have to travel to play one of like Buffalo or Cincinnati likely. And the 5 seed is going to have to play at Jacksonville or Tennessee, which are, yep. you know, not bad teams, but not nearly as scary. So I think that, you know, if the Ravens win in the morning, then the Chargers definitely are going to need to take care of business against the Broncos. But the Ravens are also 9.5 point underdogs.
That's
so.
The problem.
Yeah, Lamar's out again. For anybody
This is why the Cowboys and the Chargers are sort of similar teams. It'd be nice if one of these teams had a backup player, not the technical starter, who is also super productive no matter what, whether he's starting or whether he's in more of a breather back role. It's almost who could that be?
Does it rhyme with Pony Tollard?
Oh, that's right. It's almost like that guy's an amazing option this week. And I can also see a good week for Josh Palmer in there in 3 receiver sets, but then also as maybe the number one receiver in the fourth quarter. So there's a couple of guys like that from these games I think could be interesting. Stacking, a little more dangerous.
Yeah, I think, I mean, my concern with Pollard would be he's still coming back from an injury, and like, why rush him in there? They have Malik Davis, who they've been using to rotate in as a third back. So I think, like,
who's also better than Zeke, we found out a couple weeks ago.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I think that I'd still be probably a little bit cautious with Pollard, especially since his DFS salary is still through the roof.
Yeah. Right, is there someone else on Dallas you think Schultz you'd use?
I like the Chargers stuff a little bit more because it's one of those things where as you're heading into your, you know, let's say either you have afternoons, maybe you're playing the afternoon only slate, or you're playing, you know, you have afternoon slots available in your lineups to play around with, you'll know like what to do with the Chargers, right? They may still even start Herbert and co, but once it's locked in, you'll be like a quarter at worst, a half. Mm-hmm. And then, like you said, Josh Palmer's already going to be out there with the ones a decent amount anyway. And then you can get him, you know, as the lead wide receiver for a whole half or three quarters, or shit, you know, they could just bench all these guys for all we know. We'll know. You'll know.
I don't think they can bench Palmer because then they wouldn't have enough receivers.
No, I mean, they're starters. I mean, like, they could be an act, like Justin Herbert could be an act.
He's the answer.
Yeah, I think so too. I think so too. I was going to say maybe Josh Kelly, but they'd probably, Roundtree was getting some touches last week then too. And it's like, I don't even know that we need to go there because we do have some other backs, but I just wanted to touch on some of these spots that are like awkward, I guess is the right word, right? Mm-hmm. They're like,
yeah, I mean, like on paper, you see the Cowboys favored by 7. You're like, all right, let's load them up. But I think that like the way things are probably going to play out is the Eagles are going to be up big on the Giants backups. And Mike McCarthy's going to be like, it's like, take a seat, Tony. We need you next week. You know,
damn it.
One, before we move on to the actual games we want to talk about, I wanted to ask you guys about this game. Cause I don't have a specific, like super strong take, but what about the Bucks in terms of this similar situation? Now they also have not said like, oh, we're full out resting everybody. But what they have done historically is Brady comes out with the ones, plays like maybe two series and then goes and sits down. I think that's just kind of how Brady likes to play it, right? It's not a coaching thing. And so if they come out and do that, they are playing the Falcons, which is a pretty good matchup. The Falcons, you know, maybe or maybe not have good run backs, London, maybe Algier, something like that. Are there any Bucks that you might be interested in? Again, or if you disagree, maybe the Bucks are going to play.
Is there anyone like Tony Pollard on the Bucks?
I mean, he's not as good. Didn't we just talk about these two as a comparison the other day? I think
on our show, the Might Have Been Show.
Yeah.
Rashad, I think this might have been where I was thinking about it because I was like, these guys are in similar situations in Week 18. But I think that the Buccaneers would be less likely to feel like we can't risk getting Rashad White injured. We don't want him to get a hip pointer.
Lenny won't play, but I don't think they feel that way about Rashad.
Exactly. I think they feel like Rashad can just go and play the whole second half.
I mean, he's a rookie and Tony Pollard's in his like third year.
Totally different.
He's third. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So Pollard's definitely earned his dues, but I think Rashad White, go get the reps, young guy.
Yeah. I think that's a good play this week.
I think that about covers it for these other games that were, I thought, at least like appealing, right? We wanted to just touch the Cowboys, the Chargers, and then the Bucks.
Because isn't Russell Gage essentially like a worse version of Josh Palmer? So why?
Who cares? Scotty Miller, I guess, but like Scotty Miller catching passes from Kyle Trask doesn't sound very fun to me.
Rashad White is 5.4K on DraftKings.
I think that the running backs. Josh Palmer. I don't know that I want to touch those Chargers running backs. I think I like your point on Palmer. And it also could be more people on the Chargers if like they decide at the last minute, hey, we are actually going to rest some guys, right? But not a ton from those. So let's dive in to some of the games where we actually are pretty excited about multiple players from one side. First one being Bills and Patriots. Pretty clear here why the Bills are an appealing option. A, they're the Bills. B, they're one of the teams that's going all out to win. They're going to try to still get the one seed. And if anybody has motivation, you know, if you want to, play that motivational card, there probably hasn't been a greater motivation in the history of the NFL than the Buffalo Bills this week. I think in terms of price. Sometimes they are a difficult team to afford because Josh Allen is very frequently the highest priced quarterback, if not always the highest priced quarterback. And, you know, Diggs is expensive. Gabe used to be expensive, et cetera. I don't really think the pricing is a concern. I think what's nice about our game stat conversation this week is it can be largely just who the hell's going to score the most points because we can jam them in, right? There's going to be cheap options that open up for us to afford these guys. So, Dario, where are you headed first? Is it as simple as I really want the Allen Diggs, or how are you thinking about the Bills?
Yeah, I think that you kind of – like I do want to play this like a typical Bills stacking week with Allen – throwing like two of Knox and Diggs and Gabe Davis, of course. And then I think that James Cook is really intriguing this week. He's still, you know, pretty cheap. I think he's like a little bit below
5K.
Singletary still.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
So I think like those are all interesting options to me. And like you said, I think that the Bills have everything to play for emotionally. But as far as the one seed goes, they will know by the end of the day, Saturday, whether they have a chance at the one seed, because the Chiefs play the Raiders on Saturday.
Oh, you're
so
right.
The Chiefs take care of business, and the Bills will. I think the Bills and Bengals still can kind of like are jockeying for the two seed and potentially hosting a game between the two of them in the divisional round. Like, I think they're still. I think the Bills might have to win in order to stay the two seed and avoid dropping to the three. However, so I mean, I think that there's plenty for them to play for.
Trying to double check that. Really
I'm pretty confident the Bills will be at full strength, full capacity, full effort.
Even if the Chiefs clinch the number one seed with a win on Saturday, the Bills will still want the number two seed and can lose it in a loss with a Bengals win. So. And like you said, they obviously can win it even if the Bengals lose, but they play at the same time. So definitely no rest concerns for the Bills. I definitely want to hit some more on the Bills, but we're going to pass this to Matt for, you know, if we're going to get into the obscure plays, what Patriots, if any, would you be interested in running your
Tyquan
Bills
Thornton in there?
Oh, there we go. Now we're talking.
You want some Tyquan? Why not Tyquan Thornton? Isn't Tyquan Thornton wasn't he built in the lab for GPPs?
Yeah. Oh yeah.
I think that's your guy, man. That's all I need to know. But I do have questions though about Diggs. What happened, man? Because I have Diggs in a lot of leagues, and you know before week 17, it was not what I wanted, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it's been since the last time they faced New England that Stephon Diggs has scored more than 10 fantasy points. That was in November. It's just saying.
It's also tough, just to piggyback, he had the monster game against the Titans at the beginning of the season. For an 8K plus wide receiver on both sides, 7,900 on DraftKings, 8,400 on FanDuel. Maybe on the FanDuel price is a little bit more fair, but I don't know, man. I need me a little more juice than Stephon Diggs has been providing this year. Like, there's good games, but like I can pay $5,800 and get a lot of these 21 point games. He has been very difficult for me to click, and I don't even think it's all Diggs. Actually, I think Josh Allen has been a little bit poor throwing the ball and really taking his head down when he sees the rush pretty quickly. But
have you noticed this too?
Yeah, oh yeah.
I was putting it out there. You could tell I was a little bit tentative because I'm like, I'm just saying. And then so thank you for backing me up on this, Eric.
He's been really disappointing. And a couple times, same as you, on a couple of my best season long or best ball teams, I had Diggs, and I'll never forget it was it 2 weeks ago or anyway. Obviously it wasn't this past week, but three weeks ago. He gets a blitz look, right? Josh Allen, sorry for the people who don't like the hand in the dirt stuff, but he gets it. Literally everyone's at the line of scrimmage, man-to-man, one deep safety. Diggs is one-on-one. They do blitz. And Diggs beats his guy down the sideline. Like, this is the dream. You're like, holy shit, they just gifted me a 70-yard touchdown to Stephon Diggs situation. He throw it to him. He's your superstar. against one-on-one coverage. He just took his head down and ran off to the right like a, you know, a 16-year-old high school quarterback when they see the blitz. And it was frustrating. So I have a little bit of concerns about the Bills just kind of overall. And I think Diggs is the one who it hurts the most, because he does at his price and everything need a lot of volume and need this production. Whereas, you know, Allen can still run. Gabe, it takes one catch, right? Knox the tight end. Cook, it does, you know, Cook and Singletary, doesn't matter. So I just have some Diggs concerns.
I mean, Josh Allen's yards per game, throwing out the last game, just look at weeks 11 through 16 in the second half. He's averaging like 210 yards a game throwing the ball. It's weird.
It's not great.
I'm just saying, guys. I'm just saying. Something's not right.
We need a counterpoint to what
no, so yeah, Dario, I think it's
are you going to cape up for your man here, Josh Allen?
I think that Josh Allen, like, he'll get you there with the rushing stuff, like Eric said. Like, I mean, I don't think you need to be too afraid of playing Josh Allen in that sense. But I think probably, yeah, I'm still inclined to play him with Diggs. Like, I think they've had some throws this year where you can tell that their connection is just like on another level. But I think you guys are also the fact that the Patriots and Belichick do like to, you know, lock down your top guy and all that stuff. I think that it's probably play a little bit less of a Diggs week, but I mean, he's still the best receiver in this offense, no doubt. So oh, yeah. I think that, like, you probably, like, if you're stacking Josh Allen, you're not going to be like, I'm ignoring Diggs this week.
Yeah, because it's not like anybody, it's not like Diggs started struggling because, right? It's like Thielen was the number one for the Vikings, and then Justin Jefferson arrived, and it was like, oh, buddy, you know, there's a new sheriff in town. There's not a new sheriff in town. It's just nobody's eaten. Like, none of the wide receivers, but
Dawson Knox is consistently producing the last three weeks. And it's not like there's a lack of target consolidation. It's not like they've been getting Shakir involved or anything like that. It's what we wanted. It's exactly what we wanted. Diggs and Davis, what we wanted. And Allen's not throwing for 400 yards a game like he was in the first half of the season.
Mm-hmm.
It's just not, it's not it. He had some injuries. He had a shoulder injury, an elbow injury. Remember, he was hour to hour at one point.
Oh, yeah.
So, I mean, something's going on, man. Something mental is going on. Something physical becomes mental, becomes physical, becomes fantasy relevant.
Jesus. Yes. Yes, that is technically true.
This is what's going on. So I am not saying you don't play him. I'm saying exposure dialed down on the stack. Yes, Thornton is a great run back. He's 3.3K. It's great. I mean, coming off an 8-target game, it's beautiful. It's exactly what you want in tournaments. They're winding down. I mean, they're getting ready to ship all these guys to hell. You know that. Bourne, Parker, Aguilar. They're putting them all in some kind of command capsule, and they're going to shoot them off to the moon when the season's over. They can't wait to just have a brand new wide receiver room next year. If I were them, I'd be like, oh, my God.
Right.
I'm like counting down the hours.
Yeah, Thornton's route participation has been really encouraging the last 2 weeks.
He's
been on the field more than any receiver other than Jacoby Myers. Like, there was that massive Kendrick Bourne game out of left field, but even in that game, Tyquan Thornton ran more routes 2 weeks ago. So I think, yeah, I love the Thornton run back there too. And keep in mind, the Patriots do have something to play for as well. Like, if they, I don't know if they're win and in, but I think if they win and the Dolphins lose, they're in, and the Dolphins are starting Skylar Thompson. So yeah, there's a lot of the AFC 7 seed is kind of in a weird spot, because you have like the Dolphins, the Patriots, or the Steelers, just like all kind of, you know,
well, there. The new show we have, the Juice Betting Show, on Player Profile. I was talking to Ahan and Siobhan last night, and Dolphins are now a 3-point favorite against the Jets.
Yeah, Flacco's in now. Yeah.
So it moved from like -2 to -3 with Flacco. as if Flacco is a big downgrade. I don't even consider him a downgrade. It's not like Mike. You guys, like, since when is Mike White this like franchise caliber quarterback? Get out of here.
I feel confident in my pro Mike White stance before having seen the betting market back me, even though I never felt less confident than watching Mike White on Sunday, because holy shit, he was terrible.
He looked shaky. Like, it's almost like that's who Mike White is. The Cinderella glass slipper smashing in front of our face.
Isn't he the typical backup quarterback though? Like actually he's an NFL level backup quarterback.
Yeah.
Competent enough to come in and like, in the right situation, make some throws. But then, like you said, the Cinderella thing, everybody now thinks, oh my God, right? He's the guy, right? Like, people did this with Minshew and Hurts last year. It was like, Minshew
best example
over Hurts.
Is the team we're just talking about, the Patriots. They had this guy. Remember, there were legitimate questions in New England about whether Mac Jones was going to be permanently benched.
I also like Bailey Zappi, to be clear. I want to put that on the record.
Remember the Zappening? It's all Zappening. Dario, that was beautiful. You came up with that catchphrase. That was great. But the bottom line is, I can't figure that line out. I was like, if there's a lot of bets I like this week, just incidentally, and Jets +3, you got to love that. So that's another part of it. It's like, I think that the Patriots are going to be looking at this game and going all out, because they're like, listen, Dolphins are losing, baby.
Yeah, definitely. And to wrap on kind of what Dario was saying, the Patriots clinch the wild card with a win, but obviously I don't think they're relying necessarily. They want to, you know, have some outs in case they lose to, you know, the best team in the NFL. They still have an outside shot at a wild card spot. If they lose, the Dolphins lose, the Steelers lose, and the Jaguars win. So they'll kind of know, but obviously that doesn't, for DFS purposes, they'll be playing to win regardless, but they do have an outside shot. Let's move on to a game where I definitely don't have any questions personally about the old wide receiver one on this team. I might have some questions elsewhere, but the Minnesota Vikings face the Chicago Bears, the Nathan Peterman led Chicago Bears, no Justin Fields this week. And the Bears' defense is still really, 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 really bad. And the Vikings should pretty much name their score. Dario, do we have any concerns about the Vikings? And then if so, if not, you know, kind of elaborate on what your Justin Jefferson thoughts are, Kirk Cousins, Dalvin Cook, et cetera.
I'm pretty sure that the Vikings – like still have some roundabout weird way of, can they get the one seed? I think they're definitely playing to win, because the I'm pretty sure the Niners are in the late window, and the Niners winning or losing will affect the Vikings seeding. So I think the Vikings are far from locked in between 2 and 3. And possibly one. I mean, I don't remember if they can still get the one, like I said. But, I mean, Justin Jefferson is less than 200 yards away from Calvin Johnson's record. Obviously, that last game with only 15 yards put a big dent in that single-season record chase. But, like we just said, I mean, the Bears' defense is Swiss cheese. And I think if Jefferson tells, you know, O'Connell and Kirk Cousins, like, hey, like, I'm going after the record today. Like, just throw me the ball 15 times. Like, we could see that happen.
Kevin O'Connell was quoted as saying, just in relation to the team in this game, not to Justin Jefferson, I think it would probably be more subtle than just sitting starters, knowing that the 2 seed is still available for us. So that means to me, you know, we're going to, you know, Dalvin's going to sit a couple extra series for Madison, right? Maybe Jefferson doesn't play 100% of snaps, things like that, as opposed, you know, especially once it gets out of hand, but assuming it gets out of hand. If this one doesn't get out of hand, God, the Vikings are already fraudulent. This would really be a
it's only a +7.5 line
against Nathan Peterman. Justin Fields couldn't keep it within, what, 35 of the Lions last week, and now it's Nathan Peterman. I mean, if the Lions don't just stomp these guys. But Matt, do you have, you know,
it just shifted to +5.5. Just as we were talking. How is this possible?
Is somebody sitting?
I don't know if someone's sitting. I think that Vegas must be getting information that is not publicly available at this time about potential scenarios of guys not playing the full game in Minnesota.
And to be fair to anyone not watching this live, or if you are watching this live, you know, this is about the time when all the news starts piling in. So there may be something that drops while we are, especially in week 18, while we are recording, and certainly thereafter. So, you know, if Justin Jefferson gets ruled out, you can disregard a lot of this. But Matt, what do you think about this one? I imagine you don't have the same concerns with Justin Jefferson, but do you have any Vikings concerns at all, given they have motivation, but it's not maybe as strong as some other spots? I mean, it's not even as strong as the Bills.
I'm telling you, man, this line is so weird. 5.5. If you asked me, I would have thought it would be more likely to be 10.5 than 5.5.
Yeah, agreed.
I'm not understanding it. This makes me feel very weird and nervous about what's going on here. So I know we want, it's just tough, man. Like with Cousins, you get a double stack him. It's very tricky.
And Irv Smith is coming back.
Oh, shut your mouth.
Who was in the Cody's in the dang chat asking about Min Price Irv Smith. I don't think I want to play Min Price. We don't we had to try to talk Matt into playing Jamar Chase off of an injury. I don't think I can play Irv Smith off of, you know, 3 months away from football.
Can we play all just – we can't play the receivers we want, the elite receivers, plus also play Josh Palmer and K.J. Osborne, all those guys. I mean, K.J. Osborne? K.J. Osborne's going to play no matter what. He's going to be out there no matter what.
I could be sold on K.J. Osborne.
This is the Josh Palmer corollary. These are the guys that we know are going to be out there the whole game, either in the number three capacity or in the fourth quarter in the number one capacity.
Yeah, he caught the most garbage time of garbage time touchdowns last week.
It was beautiful. He was on my best ball team. I had a god awful week 17. That was like the blown positive shining moment. KJ Osborne, totally useless touchdown. Here's the name that I was thinking about when we were talking these garbage time guys. When they got to garbage time last week, it was not Jalen Reagor that was out there playing. It was Jalen Naylor that was out there
playing.
And he was balling against the Packers. I know it's 3 catches for 89 yards. It was in a quarter, basically. And every time you looked up during garbage time, this dude was catching a 30-yard pass. Oh, yeah. And he was a reasonable... I'll let you guys elaborate. I obviously watched him at Michigan State and stuff, but I thought he was a reasonable prospect as a wide receiver, kind of deep threat-ish, which made sense catching some deep balls. He was the one guy I wanted to touch on here. And it was, honestly, I'll admit, if he hadn't been out there doing it last week in garbage time, I wouldn't have thought about it. But if this game is going to get some of that garbage time, I mean, this is the guy, you know, he would be the guy that's out there too. So, I don't know if we need to discuss Jalen Naylor in detail. 26%
target share during the COVID year, only 7 games that year. I mean, because of the COVID timeline when he was in college, he never played more than 9 games in a season. So he's a hard guy to scout. So whenever a guy like that gets drafted, you pay attention.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, okay, this guy wasn't that dominant, but that's okay. But when you recalibrate the games he played, his dominator rating on Player Profile was 62nd percentile. That's pretty good, right? He's got great burst. He's comparable to guys like Sterling Shepard, right? Guys that are, you know, small, not necessarily burners, but have been productive in college. That's the Sterling Shepard archetype that he fits in. So, yeah, absolutely 90 yards on 5 catches. Very, very understandable and expected if he's in there for at least 3 quarters. But I don't think that's going to happen, right? I think it would be nice if we just knew if the NFL cared about fantasy and betting as they should, then there would be all these policies about announcing all this information well in advance. That's the polite thing to do. But they're not going to do any of this, right? They're just going to keep everybody in the dark, and we're not going to know.
It would also be better for the players. Like,
yes,
go out and you say, look, Tom is playing two series, or Tom is not, you know, I'm Tom Brady, right? This whole, maybe he'll play one, maybe he'll play the first half. I don't know. It's like, yes, you do. You know. And there's no reason. They use the competitive advantage thing during the course of the season. Remember when Lovey wouldn't say who was starting between Brandon Allen and Davis Mills because he didn't want to give the other team. You know, they're I forget who they're playing, like, you know, a really good team. And he's like, he didn't want to give away who the quarterback was, you know, for the competitive advantage. I'm like, that's obviously nonsense, but at least I could say, okay, it's a meaningful game, regular season or whatever. Week 18, it's like everyone knows it doesn't mean anything. Like, let the young players know how much they're going to play ahead of time. And then, like you said, let the revenue driving forces of your whole damn sport.
Yeah, it undergirds the whole sport, dude. Jesus. I mean, there are some interesting potential options, you know, down the board at quarterback. Sam Howell was a tactical scrambler in college. You know, Desmond Ridder and Tyrod Taylor. So there are some interesting, not Sam Ellinger. Okay. Jeez, not Sam Ellinger. Remember Sam Ellinger chalk week?
Yeah, that was a good week.
Remember that one? That one, Zay Jones chalk week. We've had some fun chalk weeks that were pretty comical.
Yes,
but that's a different ball game. You get down to Ridder, that Ritter's kind of an interesting guy, right? Mm-hmm. So it's just a lot harder to play our game, right? The game we play for the first 17 weeks of the season is we find these games, we stack them up, and we profit, right? Because we know we're getting leverage with these correlations, and it's money well spent. You have to dial down the correlation, don't you? Isn't this more of a value game where you're going to have more minimal correlation this week because you really can only single stack? And even when you're single stacking one side of a game, yes, we have Tyquan Thornton's a great gift, right? 3.3K, perfect run back. That's actually the presence of Tyquan Thornton actually makes Josh Allen a lot more attractive to me than he would otherwise given his struggles. But some of these other games, you don't even have that. It's so tricky. Like the Bears, get out of here. What are you going to do? You're going to Cole Kmet.
You're not playing any Giants against the Eagles this week.
That's what I mean.
It's crazy.
Like Cody's out here touting Valus, Uncle Valus Jones.
Richie James.
And I just, yeah. It's
Richie
tough.
James has been good.
Let's talk about that game, though, because I do want to talk. Well, obviously, I want to talk the Eagle side because I think we need to talk about Hurts. And how we feel about him, you know, coming back for this game. What does that mean for him or anyone's fantasy relevance? Last week was an abject failure for the Eagles. My goodness. I mean, they should have this one seed locked away a long time ago, but
how much money do you think Minshew lost?
A lot of money.
Minshew lost a lot of very
millions of dollars on lifetime earnings.
I mean, it was Musk and Minshew lost the most money.
Sounds like
I don't know.
Firm.
SBF has to be up there too.
SBF.
I think that was a couple weeks earlier.
The law firm of Musk and Minshew. I like this.
I love it, man. A lot of money gone.
But seriously, I mean, he probably would have got a really hefty bridge QB contract. I don't know if he's signed for next year, so I don't want to speak too out of turn. But I mean, everybody, there's like 12 good quarterbacks in the whole NFL. Everybody has been so excited for Gardner Minshew. It's like, dude, just don't screw up. And that's what he did against Dallas. Like, okay, didn't screw up. Then went out against the Saints and looked like Mike White did. Except Mike White doesn't have AJ Brown and Devonta Smith and Dallas Goedert and everything. It was really bad. But this week, week 18, GPPs, Jalen Hurts is back.
Thank God.
Gets the Giants probably a lot of backups on defense. The Eagles are playing to win, so they should theoretically score as many points as they would like, but you would have to assume, similar to the Vikings thing, if they get out ahead, you know, there's no real reason to push it too hard, right? We're up by 30 in the third quarter. We don't need to be, you know, running Jalen Hurts type of things. We probably don't even need to be running Miles Sanders, although I'm not sure they give a shit about Miles Sanders.
I wouldn't overthink this one. He's been off for weeks, and they're going to be looking at another off week. So play him. Get him sharp. Get him some. Get him all the stats he can. Get Devontae Smith the franchise record for receptions. Get it all. Go after it all, man. I love this. I love this situation. Run it back with Richie James.
So that's what I was going to ask. So this is in the afternoon. This is in the afternoon window. I agree with you on Hurts. Question for both of you: Hurts or Josh Allen? Ignoring the stack, Hurts or Josh Allen this week? Who do you prefer? Similar ownership. They're similar.
I'm going Hurts for all the reasons we talked about earlier. I prefer Hurts this week.
I'm going to say Allen just because of the emotional situation. I think the Bills have like if he has a 5-touchdown game, I don't think anyone would be surprised.
All right, checkmate, Dario. You
that is checkmate. There's nothing. There's not an argument you can make, at least not in public. Against,
I have no retort.
against that. I think it is really tough though. The thing that I like, you mentioned Tyquan Thornton. I wanted to get into the Giants because they are going to be resting quote unquote several key starters, whatever that means. I mean, I assume Daniel Jones and Saquon, but they really don't have any other key.
Wait a second. Oh my God. Wait, are you saying is Richie James a key starter?
I think so. That's what I was going to ask. Are Richie James, Darius Slayton, are they keys? Is Isaiah Hodgins a key? We're going to get Kenny Galladay in garbage time of week 8. He's going to be out there finally playing.
This is exactly what I had to think about when I was projecting week 18, guys. So I was like looking at the Giants receiver room like, are these guys key starters? Like, what's going to happen here? Like, oh, I mean, they can't, are they just going to play like 3 tight end formations all game? Right. Like, it's
27-year-old Middle Tennessee State retread, been out of the league 7 different times for 7 different teams. Richie James is now a key player. I love him. He had like a 1,600-yard season in college. I love Richie James, but I'm just saying this is weird.
I mean, take away the name and look at these box scores. 7 targets, 7 catches, 76 yards, and a touchdown. 12 targets, 8 catches, 90 yards. 5 targets, 4 catches, 42. 9. This is better than Stephon Diggs' game log. This looks like a key. This looks like a key starter to me. Is this not a key starter?
Hodgins is too. Then.
Yeah, pull up Hodgins too.
Hodgins is like the same. Hodgins, you know, not quite as much juice, but the guy's still doing it every single week. 4 for 42 in a touchdown. 8 for 89 in a touchdown. 4 for 37. 4 for 38 in a touchdown. 5 for 44 in a touchdown. It's like,
and they signed him off the Bills practice squad in season this year, right? Like,
so is there a talent level of Tyquan Thornton, but I think there could be something here on the Giants. You could also, if Saquon sits, is it going to be Breeder? Or are they going to play Gary Brightwell?
It's probably going to be a split between the two of them. So there's probably not a ton of excitement around either. I would say more inclined to protect Breida since he's like legitimately their backup to Saquon, and they have
also very
literally
fragile.
Nothing to play for. But yeah, it's the difference in salary that makes me hesitate to say, oh, you might as well just like play Brightwell or Breida as opposed to the receivers. Cause at least with the receivers, like, you can play Galladay or Marcus Johnson for literally.
Yeah, Marcus Johnson actually had played a lot more snaps, ran a lot more routes than Galladay last week. It might be Marcus Johnson.
And Marcus Johnson, it was weird. He, like, I think he was sort of in that Isaiah Hodgins role where he seemed like he was getting elevated and running a lot more routes. And then that kind of just disappeared. He, like, I guess he fell out of the favor of the coaches really quickly. Midseason.
Mm-hmm. But hasn't he been like a week 17, week 18 guy for like the last 5 years?
Right on the Colts.
I feel like this is his job is to light it up.
I kind of think so. Too.
In week 18, isn't this why he was created?
It's kind of like a guy who we don't need to talk much about, but they have a tight end, Tanner Hudson, on the Giants, who has been a preseason DFS god forever because he's always just good enough to compete for one of those last roster spots. And but he's a, you know, receiving type option, so that he's out there for three quarters, right, in these meaningless preseason games. That's what Marcus Johnson kind of feels like at wide receiver to me. So I'm not going to say
Marcus Johnson had a stretch in Indianapolis where he had 120 receiving yards in 3 out of 4 weeks. He also had a 158-yard week and 117-yard week in there.
He's got a bunch of 100-yard games.
Yeah. And he's that was Galladay.
Oh. But Marcus Johnson has one.
He's like a bunch?
Oh no, that's terrible. I went all this whole season without making one of those kind of blunders. Oh, I couldn't make it through week 18 without like an egregious mistake.
Fun fact, guess how many 100-yard games Marcus Johnson has?
I bet he has more than two.
Dario?
I was just looking at the same thing as Matt was saying. I think I saw two or three.
Three, yeah. He said three. He also, we're going to get real fun. It's week 18. Why not? The very first team that Marcus Johnson played for in the NFL, week 18 opponent, Philadelphia Eagles, he is the week 18 archetype of a wide receiver, and this team cut him after his rookie season, and he's bounced around the league ever since. Now he gets a chance to pay it back to him on the Giants.
Wow.
Yep.
He was an Eagle?
Tyrod Taylor does throw a nice deep ball.
He was an Eagle. He actually got to play in the first game of his rookie season. I'm learning a lot today on this show, guys. How old is he? 20.
He's
oh my God.
Fascinating guy.
Yeah, he is. He's
still, he's okay. At least I knew he had multiple 100-yard games.
Yeah, three.
Three. That's good.
Good for him.
He's the Stone Man.
But
let's go, Marcus Johnson.
He spent a lot of time on Marcus Johnson, but I think to your point, it's interesting to dive into some of these run back type guys because you know what's going to happen right in roster construction and ownership is our conversations about playing Jalen Hurts to AJB or Allen to Diggs. That's not profound. Everybody's like, are you interested in Jalen Hurts? Yes. But then when you get down to the value stuff, it's always going to be like the new shiny toy, right? Okay, Jonathan Williams. Everybody just jams Jonathan Williams because Brian Robinson and Antonio Gibson are out. Or everybody just, which I'm not sure that I would do necessarily this week. But anyway, there's all those value guys that are going to be the new thing, right? The sure backup that's playing. And talking about Marcus Johnson and talking about Tyquan Thornton and those kind of guys, I think that's the biggest leverage point of this slate this week, as opposed to our normal, you know, let's maybe find a game stack that's a little different.
Are we sure, though, that I'd like to get into the head of the coaches in New York. I feel like they might think that Slayton is like their number one and that they'd be fine playing Hodgins and James or one of them for the full game.
I think I would bet Hodgins plays more than I would bet the other two.
Yeah. I think I wish we knew. I wish it was more clear, right? Because clearly we know like where KJ Osborne sits, even though KJ Osborne's technically better at this point than Thielen. That's not how the coaches view them. Mm-hmm. Same thing with Josh Palmer. If we just knew who they think of as their top two receivers are, that would be really helpful. But when you look at their performances the last month, you can't distinguish these three guys. You know, Slayton's top of the depth chart, the official depth chart, so you really can't play him. Between Hodgins and James, it's a real riddle.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's like Hodgins has played slightly more snaps over the last 5 weeks, but James has seen more targets in the same stretch. So
I almost think that they might play James. My first instinct, my gut told me James was a great run back. I don't think I'm off it.
I think it's fine. One thing is, so Richie James plays mostly in the slot, correct? Whereas Hodgins is a big
more of an outside
slow guy on the outside. Yeah. And red zone type guy. Do they have another? I mean, I'm sure they have a guy who can play there, but that also
Kenny Galladay can play out there.
Yeah, Kenny Galladay.
That's the big question, Eric. That's the big question we've been asking ourselves for years. Can Kenny Golladay play the Hodgins role?
This is what people were debating all offseason when they were drafting Kenny Golladay in the 11th round or whatever. Like, can he step in and fill in for Isaiah Hodgins? This conversation is making my head hurt with Marcus Johnson.
It's really tricky, man.
It is really tricky, but I think there's juice to squeeze from this group. It's just I don't know if we'll be able to figure out where the juice is, right? But I think that there's something here because the Giants are going to hang a huge number. Tyrod is not good, but it's not Skylar Thompson or something like that. Like, I feel confident, you know, if somebody gets open, Tyrod can get him the ball. And so I think all those guys are pretty interesting. I know we just left it wide open for the viewers. You guys decide.
Well, question for Dario here. Well, this is why you tune into the Stack Fest, because we you know, who are the fringe run backs that you need to be thinking about? Mm-hmm. Tyrod, the cash viable, right?
I think so. I mean, they're going to be chasing points. He's not as cheap as some of the like a Howell or Flacco, but it's not.
But I'm
really that big a difference.
Yeah, exactly.
And I mean, I think that it comes down to like how long the Eagles starters are in the game, right? If the Eagles good defensive players are off the field for like most or all of the second half, and Tyrod gets like easily to, you know, 250 and two touchdowns in total garbage time, I think that's like kind of looking up for him.
Yeah.
Good call. All right, let's talk about out of our two and a half games left. Let's definitely talk about the one where we know for certain both teams are playing to win. We have the full starters, except Lamar Jackson is not playing. The other side of the unfortunate Monday night game, the Bengals come in and not the same level of necessarily emotional, you know, energy that they'll be bringing, but they're playing for a whole lot here in this game. That two seed is right there for the taking. I think they're really peaking to me. The Bengals are a really exciting team. We've kind of talked about them for a while. We 2 months ago or something, Matt talked about their O-line really starting to gel, right? Chase comes back. They hit the ground running. Hayden Hurst is back. Joe Mixon came back from his injury. The defense is, you know, slowly getting healthier. Everything is really coming together. Matt and I talked about Eli Apple the other day, and like somehow this guy's turned into a competent football player. Mm. Everything's really coming together for the Bengals. They feel like Joe Burrow feels like this almost like lock and load. I don't know that he can do what Hurts and Allen can do, but like every single week, and particularly this week, Burrow just feels like this dude who I feel really confident is going to go out and put up a good score. What does that mean? Does that mean 24? Does that mean 35? I don't know, but I'm not worried about them pulling him, you know, in the third quarter up by 21. But I'm just excited about the Bengals, not so much excited about the Ravens. But Dario, how do you feel about Bengals Ravens here? Sans Lamar.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think that, you know, when I set out these games and I looked at all five of these offenses, because these are, like I said, really just like one-sided stacking games. I think the Bengals are the most exciting one to play. They, you know, are effectively coming off a bye week, and I think that their emotional like driving purpose right now is not quite the same as the Bills, but they kind of got the short end of the stick from the way the NFL accommodated all this like bye week seeding nonsense, because basically the Ravens were told like, oh, if you're a half a game behind, we'll give you a coin toss to see who gets home field. But the Bengals could finish a half a game out of the one seed, and they're not getting a coin toss for the one seed. So, I mean, some of the stuff coming out of their locker room today, and the way, like you guys said, the way that team has just been playing for the last month and a half, the defense is insanely good. Joe Burrow's dialed in. I think this is by far the offense that I'm like most excited to stack this week.
What do you think, Matt?
Well, my question is, who do you run it back with as usual? And I J.K. Dobbins finally got to 50% snap share last week, hit it right on the nose. So he's been going up 35%. I mean, the yardage has been driven by big plays, so you can't look at that, but you look at the snap share, 35, 38, 45, 50. he's getting healthier. He's looking better. He's explosive. You know, he can get you the 100 yard bonus. He can get you a touchdown. He can put up 20 fantasy points. So he's an option. DeMarcus Robinson. I mean, you can't find guys that are going to. DeMarcus Robinson has this fringy maybe path to 15 fantasy points. And then you've got Mark Andrews. It's just that, you know, Huntley can't deliver the football. That's why Andrews not even he's priced below Kittle, below Hockenson, and no one's surprised. Though he went 9 for 9 last week. That's probably best case scenario, 22 fantasy points with no without a touchdown.
Yeah, he got to 100 yards without a touch or 100 yards, 19 points and no touchdown. I think that for me it's still Andrews because the targets are a lot like flukier with DeMarcus Robinson. And like you said, Mark Andrews is no longer like right with Kelsey, where playing him is just like a huge like salary burden and you're going to have to work around it. It's like, it's sure he's a more expensive tight end, but he's no longer like prohibitively expensive. And I think he's going to get those looks. I mean, he's got at least 5 targets every week since week 8. And most of those games, it's at least 7 targets. So I think he's going to get those looks from Huntley. Whether, you know, whether he's able to turn that into a good game for you, it's not.
You're going to be, in terms of run backs, you're probably going to be 70% on Andrews, maybe 30% on Dobbins. No receivers are usable, right?
I think so. Not this week. Because of the week 18 element, there's going to be guys, right? We haven't talked about a ton of them, but like there's going to be guys that pop up that are 3K or whatever. The benefit of DeMarcus Robinson on a normal slate is that there aren't those guys, right? The punts are like really bad fourth wide receivers on teams.
But so yeah, and the thing is, though, they don't have anyone that you're excited about. They don't have anyone who's interesting, right? Like Jalen Naylor. If they had a Jalen Naylor, we would have a conversation.
Tyler Huntley's throwing the ball.
It's freaking Sammy Watkins. It's Deshaun Jackson getting their 2 targets for 19 yards.
Andy Isabella.
Get the hell out of here.
Okay, now we're talking. Let's talk about Andy Isabella. No, I'm kidding. I will never forget the amount of Andy Isabella was like the Jalen Tolbert of a few years ago in fantasy football, where I drafted so much of him and literally was not even active most game days. And then finally got on special teams and then everybody got hurt and he finally caught 1 long touchdown. And that was like the most fun I've ever had on a Monday night football game.
Yay!
So shout out to Andy. It's all these washed up losers on the Ravens, right? DeMarcus Robinson, Deshaun Jackson and Andy Isabella.
It's
like
crazy.
What are we doing?
It's crazy. I mean, also, it's like even a DeMarcus Robinson, I'll pull out the red zone channel will come up and I'm like, oh, interesting. Let's see what the Ravens can do. DeMarcus Robinson drop in the back of the end zone. It's like, bro, you'd only get so many opportunities. If you can't drop that, what the hell? What is your value if you're not squeezing that football? Jesus.
Yeah, he was so good playing with Patrick Mahomes.
Come on,
he can't even do anything with Patrick Mahomes. He's going to produce with Tyler Huntley and Anthony Brown.
It's not good.
So I think
some of these plays where it's like, listen, at least with a Jalen Naylor, what I'm saying is, he could be pretty good,
right?
And you get a low salary, good player, good team, good situation. You don't play DeMarcus Robinson under any circumstances because he's not good. And we know that the quarterback is not a volume quarterback. So it's the way he gets there is such a fringy set of scenarios. No, man. So it's just Andrews. Man, given how much I think the level of certainty we have with this particular game and this particular stack, the Burrow stacks, it's almost like Andrews would be so few options at tight end that you can rely on, right? We talked about, Schultz and how that's fringy, and Everett, we don't have certainty. And now Hockenson has Herb Smith and down the board. You could look up and your most owned player in your portfolio is actually Andrews.
Mm-hmm.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
That's interesting.
I think so too. The positional thing is huge this week. I think, as Dario said, the price has come down so much. I mean, 5,400 is not cheap, still necessarily for a tight end, but you know, you're not paying those Kelsey prices anymore. It's not that much of a cost prohibitive slate relative to some other slates. And again, 5,400. I mean, we've been talking about the likes of Kittle and Hockenson for weeks, and they've been around that price. Right. And so yeah. I don't see why you can't play Mark Andrews at the same price we've been playing, say,
like
George
Kittle. A ton of them.
Yeah. The other thing I was going to say is we don't have a lot to glean from the first matchup of these two teams this year, because that was I believe it was the Phantom T doesn't play game, whether he got hurt in warmups or whatever it was. And then if I recall, they basically just like doubled Chase all game and said, okay, Trenton Irwin, go for it. Although Trenton Irwin, apparently not quite as bad at football as everybody thought. But if you recall, when the Ravens defense really got banged up last season, a little bit different situation. Chase just went absolutely bonkers, and as did Burrow in this spot. And so I think that it's just a generally good matchup, I think, for the way that the Bengals play offense. You know, if Burrow gets man, he doesn't make the mistake I was talking about earlier that Allen did with Diggs. He's like, it's one-on-one to Chase. Guess who's getting the ball? I'm giving him a shot to do it, right? He'll do it with T, et cetera. So these guys are like old reliable to me. And I think Andrews kind of becomes that old reliable tight end to me. And we can make whatever work with those guys in it. One last thing on these. Do you have a preference between Chase, T? Are you double stacking him, Dario? Any Boyd? You know, Boyd came out hot, had a touchdown the other night. And then Hayden Hurst, if you're not going to use Andrews. Just anything extra in this game?
I think that, I mean, looking at these ownership numbers, it's funny because I don't think they've come through yet on our player pages for some reason. So this is my first look at your projected ownership. But
yeah, a lot of things, player props, a lot of stuff is in flux right now.
Mm-hmm. But I think that, I mean, looking at that gap in ownership, I think you have to love playing T. Higgins. And then, like you said, Hayden Hurst, like, I think he had two catches in the first 10 minutes of that Monday night game. Like, he seems to be back and involved. So I think that, like, it's all go on the Bengals' weapons. Like, you can double or even triple stack Burrow with two or three of those guys as you see fit, as you can, you know, jam into a lineup accordingly.
Anything else, Matt, on this one?
I agree with Dario. Higgins, baby. Higgins, and don't forget, Higgins, Andrews, skinny stacks elsewhere.
Yep.
That's why. That when I was doing the math in my head, that's why I was like, well, we're also going to have a lot of Andrews skinny stacks. So that means it the way it shakes out, you're going to be maximum sort of exposed to Andrews this week.
Here's a quick... another little fun stat, maybe not quite as fun as how many 100-yard games as Marcus Johnson had in his career. Total passing yards for Joe Burrow against the Ravens last season.
Oh, it was like 1,000.
Almost 1,000.
Nice.
I remember that.
Almost 1,000. And the second game was the one. The first game, I was pulling up the box scores, and I'm like, it was only 403. I'm like, I felt like it was more like only 403 is like a bad thing. And then you pull up the second one, and you see, hold on, like that just closed on me, and you see 525 yards and four four touchdowns with it was actually T in the second one that went for 12 for 194 and two touchdowns in that game. Chase had a very disappointing 7 for 125. You know, just a casual 125 yards. So yeah, pretty into the Bengals here. Let's talk about
hold on real quick. Just so you know, weather in Cincinnati, 40 degrees with 5 mile an hour winds.
Okay. Don't do that.
Well, I just want to make sure everybody knows. Like, this game is a smash. There's nothing to hold you back here. And I'm to the point where there's so much uncertainty with all these other stacks. I was trying to think back through the weeks if there was another stack or another quarterback, just talk about, to say, Burrow stacks, where you'd be more, your ownership would be more skewed, right? So not only would Andrews be the most heavily owned player in your portfolio, but also that Burrow, you'd be more exposed to Burrow as a percentage of your, if you were max entering to a large field tournament, than any other stack in any other week of the season.
It's a good question.
Yeah, I don't think that's unreasonable.
No,
I know there were a few weeks where we absolutely loved like Mahomes that week, right?
Right.
But there was typically at least two other stacks we really liked. This is a rare scenario where it's like this stack is so far above the others, both in terms of upside and certainty.
And one thing I really like say you're, even if you're like 10 playing 10 teams or like 20 max, right? Like DraftKings have like the $4 20 max and different stuff like that. But even if you're 150ing or any form of multi-entry, the really cool thing about say going all in on a Bengals stack is you do kind of have like some bases you would like to cover, right? T versus Chase is the most obvious one. It's like, I don't want to have all T. I don't want to have all Chase. I want mostly Andrews, like you said, but I want a little Dobbins, right? I want a little Hurst. And then in that case, maybe then I want a little Hurst, right? I want a sprinkle of Boyd, whatever. There's a few different. So I really like that, you know, and then we can mix in all these, no pun intended with mixing while we're talking about this.
That's the second time you've done that.
God damn it. we need this season to be over. But all those other, right? You want, okay, let's get some Jefferson on that team. Let's get some Diggs and Tyquan on that team and those kinds of things, right? There's your Marcus Johnson or Richie James with Hurts or not Hurts with AJ Brown, or, you know, there's a lot of fun things, but then you can really capture this game. I really like this.
Yeah, they're a pretty clear stack to build around, I would agree. And I think one thing I want to point out too is the Bengals lost to the Ravens the first time they played each other this season. So it's not just like, oh, they have to win for playoff reasons. Like, this is a divisional rivalry. They could be seeing each other again next week. Like, the Bengals have every incentive to really hang a big number on the Ravens. So I think, like, yeah, all the more reason to fire away with this game.
Good call. And our last game that we might talk about one more game after this, but the last one that is officially on both sites, these sites, man. My God, it's the end of the season. We don't have to change up the slate strategy on week 18. But Arizona travels to San Francisco. San Francisco, I don't know if Jared Stidham is just that good or maybe he's just the Niners kryptonite, because they just been laying the smackdown on everybody, and Stidham came in and just about took them out last week, almost full strength, no Debo, but it looks like Debo will be back this week. It looks like Elijah Mitchell will also be back this week, which is somewhat interesting. The Cardinals are, you know, down in the dumps. I should look, I guess. Did it say, so Colt McCoy is out, or they're just not playing him and they're playing David Blau? I can't remember, but Rondale is out. You know, DeAndre Hopkins is out. All these guys are out. Last week we saw Trey McBride pop up for a huge game on the Cardinals side, and quite a bit of targets for Hollywood Brown. So I think some of the run back talk will be at least mildly interesting. James Conner is also not going to play in this game. Tough matchup, but the Niners should score, Dario, about as many points as they want. And they got a lot of appealing guys. How do you feel about the Niners? Because they're one of those where we know they're going to score a bunch, or I believe we know they're going to score a bunch, but who are you like favoring with, especially with Debo back?
Yeah, I think Debo back makes it really interesting. And I think Elijah Mitchell back is you know, underrated as well, because that at least caps Christian McCaffrey's like percentage of the rushing game. I think that, I mean, it's hard not to trust Kittle right now, the way that he's been playing lately. And then Ayuk has also been putting on like a clinic these last like 6 weeks or so. So I think that it's still tough to read. I think probably Kittle the best, just because he operates in that area of the field. It's a little bit closer for Purdy. And I think that like Kyle Shanahan is going to design, you know, the plays that are able to get him there. But I do think that this is a game.
I got to disagree. The splits with Debo and without Debo are pretty damning.
For Kittle.
Yeah. So they're similar guys. They're yards after the catch monsters that operate short intermediate areas. Just like you said, areas of the field. The guy that's in a unique area is Ayuk. He's playing well with Purdy. And Debo's not really a threat to his area in his role. He's an X receiver. He's playing on the perimeter. Like part of the thesis for having so much Andrews is that there is all these issues with all these other tight ends. But I mean, I would play more Kittle than Debo. First game back from injury like this, we don't like to play these guys. That's one of our rules. We don't like to play much of them.
And Mitchell is back at the same time. So it's like you could maybe, even if you ignored the injury, you could convince yourself, okay, Debo's back. He's 6K. Plus maybe he gets some of that rushing work. It's like that running work is gone with Mitchell back, right? And you're not getting any of those, you know, inside the red zone carries for Debo.
Especially in this meaningless game. I mean, I think that if anything, this is like a preseason game for Debo, right? Like they're like, okay, go play, you know, 3 or 5 drives. And let us know how your hamstring, it was a hamstring, right? How your hamstring or knee?
I don't remember.
It was an ankle, you're right. Yeah.
Ankle, because he went down and it looked like it ate an ACL when he went down. And I was like, oh, you know, I got 49ers futures over here. And you know, Debo tears his ACL is what I was certain it was an ACL. And I was so mad. And then the next day they're like, oh yeah, we don't think it's that serious. I'm like, he looked like he got shot on the field.
But he did miss a bunch of games.
Yeah.
I can't believe that they get away with that. That's just another thing that they do to basically offend the sensibilities of the people that are spending all the money around the sport. It's not serious.
It's terrible. It's terrible for the player.
He missed a month. What do you mean it's not serious? Shut up.
Yeah, exactly.
Shut your mouth.
Speaking of the passing attack, though, here, I think it was before the show, Dario mentioned, you know, if you would, I believe you said something like, if you'd like to get funky, you could play some Brock Purdy stacks. Are you going to play any Brock Purdy stacks? And if so, you know, what's your favorite way? Are you for sure doubling him or just singling him? You know, what's your kind of preference on the Purdy side of things?
I think you can play him. I think that, you know, there's really, it's these four guys that we're looking at, right? McCaffrey, Ayuk, Kittle, and then do you trust Debo in this game? Mm-hmm. But I think you just kind of like pick two of those and roll the dice. McCaffrey's obviously the most expensive by a ton. So I think if you're taking him, it's going to be the hardest to work around. But I also think that, I mean, he's been so good. I can't stop thinking about the irony of, you know, people drafting him behind Jonathan Taylor because of the injuries and then Jonathan Taylor missing like 10 games this season. It's just like,
it's really
bad karma, but also the
Brock Purdy has negative rushing yards in as many games as he has positive rushing yards. Okay, Brock Purdy's a winner
and he kneels the ball down.
He has a problem for fantasy football and that he does not run, and that they are gonna. This is a running game script. So, again, all the more reason to just pound Burrow into the earth.
I have a problem with quarterbacks who, in college, were not even good fantasy assets. Like if you played either college football DFS or college, like you play season long or something like that for college football, I can't get, this is a personal issue. I have a mental block. When you play for 5 years in the Big 12 and you can't ever like put up big passing numbers. I know the school he played for, you know, they had Breece and stuff. They were a little bit more of a running team, David Montgomery, but I just can't wrap my right. There's guys throwing for, you know, Kyler's throwing for like 5,000 yards and running for 1,000 yards in the Big 12. And Purdy is putting up, you know, like Vanderbilt quarterback numbers. And
well, Zappy had 8,000 yards.
Well, yeah, exactly. It's because Zappy's a god. He's a we were blessed from the fantasy gods with Zappy.
College football fantasy right there.
Yes, exactly. He came from really tiny little school to Western Kentucky. But anyway, I just can't wrap. And Purdy, you kind of mentioned the rushing thing. Like he'll move a little bit when it's necessary, but he's not interested in running. You know, I just play the guy. I think he's a distributor. He's like a younger, better version of Jimmy G. I don't know if it's better, worse, whatever, but he's just kind of like Jimmy G. And it's like, we were never playing Jimmy G in DFS. Yeah. So let's just play. Well,
Kittle. At least he's not getting Kittle injured with, you know, by, you know, airball, you know, airballing slants.
Jimmy G, the king of the hospital ball. Yeah, at least we don't have to watch that anymore.
I mean, at least not that. I appreciate Purdy for that. It's interesting to try to find a good comp for Purdy. It's not that easy. It kind of reminds me of like a he's on like a Davis Mills from last year type streak, which is I think a good comp for him.
Mm-hmm.
He could have
Davis easily... Mills had these weapons. Yeah, I mean that's the thing. He has the best weapons in the NFL.
Yeah, it's cool. It's fine. Yeah. It's fine. But I mean, we're going back to Burrow stacks, and then for skinny stacking purposes here, I think that you have Hollywood, which is a great option. He wants to finish the season strong, and so you have Hollywood Ayuk. You can have Hollywood. Do you think McCaffrey plays the whole game?
I do not. No.
Yeah, I don't think so.
I don't even think Kittle's going to play the whole game. They do want to keep him healthy. He's very important. Yeah. So, Ayuk would be the guy. I think Ayuk Brown stacks are very interesting in this game.
Yeah, I think Dortch is viable too. I mean, he's had like 21 targets combined in the last two games or something like
you
that.
You and Dortch. Remember that? Oh, man, I was thinking about you, Dario. I saw Dortch put up like 1.6 fantasy points on 10 targets or something. I thought of you because remember you're like, is this a Dortch week? And I was like, I don't know, Dario. You know, he had 5.5 fantasy points. He was the stone man. Remember we were having this whole conversation?
Oh, I remember.
And then we did it all over again in week 17. Same thing. We were going through all these guys, Richie James on down the board. You know, some of these guys dudded out hard because they didn't get targets or whatever it was, like Zacchaeus. Some of these guys got the targets, like the thesis was correct. But the problem with being correct about Greg Dortch is sometimes it doesn't matter because he's Greg Dortch.
I mean, you're ignoring the fact that he averaged, if you take his two prior games with where he was actually playing full time, he's averaging 100 yards in those two games. So
I did take that into consideration. And then I went to Player Profiler and I find out this guy runs a 4.7 and he's 5.9.
Yeah, and he's like 170 pounds.
So I was like, I'm going to take this with a grain of salt this week. I'm going to play my Richie James.
I will say, so, I think Dortch and I prefer Hollywood. I think Trey McBride is in play again. I find it interesting.
Oh, yeah.
That Trey McBride came to life last week. 10 targets, 7 for 78 and a touchdown. And he's only 3,300. Obviously, Zach Ertz ain't coming back through that door. I know the matchup is not great, but like, no offense to Hayden Hurst, they're like the same price. Like, I'll take the Chase and Higgins side of the Bengals offense. Trey McBride, you know, could be the highest scorer like he was last week for the Cardinals.
Yeah, we got Knox, we got McBride, we got Goddard. Course Andrews, there's some, we got some options, right? But yeah, I could see McBride being your second most exposed tight end. just because it's so clear, like the targets are consolidated. I don't count Dortch as like a factor in like whether or not the ball's gonna go to McBride or not. Sorry, Dario. Again,
but it really went to three guys. It really went to three guys. It's
consolidated. You love it.
It's really consolidated between three guys. And David Blau is not, you know, someone I'm excited about. Shout out to him for still being in the NFL. But I was impressed.
Maybe there's your Purdy comp right there.
It probably is. It probably
if Purdy were on the Lions 2 years ago, he would have been David Blau.
I think David Blau threw for more yards in college than
probably.
Than we're gonna find that out. But I think it's
you know people that like follow college football think that don't follow college. They actually think Purdy's good.
Oh yeah, they actually think he's good. Shit. Yeah, people are losing their minds. He's not
it's
good.
Like, whoa!
It's like the Minshew thing. It's like
it's a zappy thing. It's all over again.
He made a couple good throws. He's throwing to a goddamn Pro Bowl roster.
My dad wanted them to bench Mac Jones for Bailey Zappi.
Well, God bless your dad.
And I was like, Dad, you're falling for it? He's talking about columnist X from the Boston Globe. I'm like, Dad, how many times?
That is great. The running backs. There was one last thing. I really like all those guys as bring backs or skinny stacking partners, right? Dortch, Hollywood, McBride. But James Conner is also out. Now, this matchup is about as brutal as it gets for poor old Keontae Ingram and Corey Clement, but they are sub 5K running backs.
Ingram.
And we know what James Conner was doing. I assume we're team Keontae here, but as you see on Roto-Grinders, a little higher projection for Corey Clement. Dario, do you you a Keontae guy or what?
Well, Corey Clement played 42% of snaps last week, and Keontae played none. So that's what's driving their projections and mine. But I think that there's a chance that they do look at this as like, well, it's week 18. We should give the rookie a look because Corey Clement has been around the league. We know what he is. There's plenty of tape on Corey Clement. But
plenty.
Yeah, it's... I don't know.
He's a guy.
28 just years old guy. Versus 21. 28 years old versus 21. Who do we need to play in week 17 or week 18? I can't agree.
Play Ingram. So, Dario, I'm with you, man. I mean, that really is cold water. We can't play Ingram then.
I think it takes some cojones.
I mean, it takes like you'd have to have a lot of faith in Cliff Kingsbury.
It is the 49ers.
So much worse.
Yeah, exactly.
Whenever you have athletic running backs that can catch, I get very excited. So, but I'm also you can't play guys with zero snaps. So I just
you can play them; they're just not going to score anything.
It's a bummer.
They
man.
Can't play. Is the difference?
What a bummer, man! Come on, audition him.
All right. Before we
like Keontae. He was at USC while I was working for the team there my last year, and I think he looks good. But yeah,
hey,
if you're not,
nice
he's not
guy.
On the field.
Looks like a nice guy.
Yeah,
he's very nice.
Well, no, some of these guys like they scowl. Like he has like a he's a big smile in his headshot. That goes a long way, man. I'm like, okay, I like this guy. You know, like dude, what all it takes is one headshot to win me.
Headshot
over.
Scouting. Coming to your profiler next month.
Matt has officially run out of the narrative-based side of things. You know, we did the Isaiah Pacheco. Well, he had one target this week. He had two targets the next week, and then he had three targets. So what are you projecting him for? Four targets. You know, now we're into the headshot analysis range of the season. That's how we decide between all these shitty 3K wide receivers that nobody wants to play. You're like, is he smiling in his headshot? Okay, boost up the exposure a few percent because he's a good person, you know?
Not only is the show over, the season's over for us. It seems like we've reached the end of all takes.
I do want to really, really quickly hit the Packers and the Lions, which might have been the game we spent the most time on if it were actually on both sites to play. I just want to really quick hit each of you guys' high-level thoughts on Packers-Lions. First, I guess I'll cover, it's possible the Lions will know that they may not have anything to play for by this game, correct? That is correct. The Packers need to win regardless. The Lions may need to win. So it could be like one of the games of the year. It also could be, who knows? My take before I kick it to you guys is I can't possibly imagine a coach, someone like Dan Campbell, preparing the troops all week for, you know, the game of their season. And then even if they find out that they're not playing for anything, backing off. I personally can't see that, you know, so I just think it's wheels up if you want to play this
Thank
game.
Thank you for saying
straight.
That. I wanted to make sure that was said. Like that.
I feel the same way.
Whether the Seahawks win or not before doesn't matter at all, because you have the guy that's like, all I care about is you guys. It's all I think about, man. It's all I dream about. It's just you guys, man. Don't you understand how much I love you guys? If you think they're not going to play for that, come on, man. They're going to be 100%.
And they can knock the Packers out of the playoffs. They don't like the Packers. Like,
you know that he's got two pregame speeches prepared right now. This exact moment already. It's like, you had a great season. You know, we're not playing for our own playoff berth, but God damn it, if I don't want to knock out those damn pack, you know, Aaron Rodgers.
We don't care about this draft pick because we already have the Rams one that's top 10. So right. Go ahead and win.
That's right. So many good points we're making here.
But is there, let's say
it's Brown, baby.
Yeah. Let's say it's straight up.
Brown gets inside, right? Alexander is mostly outside, but Alexander can't match up with both Chark and Williams at the same time. He's not two people, right? Yep. So Chark's definitely going to get opportunities to get away from Alexander. St. Brown's going to be away from Alexander most of the game. So I'm going right back to Chark and St. Brown, baby. And then watch Williams score three touchdowns.
DeAndre Swift finally broke through for us last week. I think if it wasn't for the fact that Justin Jackson is coming back this week, I'd be a lot more excited to play him, because I think Justin Jackson comes back, he'll probably get like a third of the snaps, a third of the carries, a couple targets there. So I think it's kind of hard to get a read on that Lions backfield. Once again, I'm with you on St. Brown and Chark. And I think that from the Packers side, you can probably play any of Lazard and Dobbs and Watson, probably in the order of Watson, Lazard, Dobbs. So the opposite that I said initially.
I also want to throw out it. Well, it's two things. I am happy to be Charlie Brown with the football, Lucy with the football, with DeAndre Swift. Anytime, like, you know, it's always fool's gold, but anytime I see something, I'm like, look, if that wasn't a blowout last week, you know, he would have played X amount of snaps. He would have, you know, it was only because of the blowout. And I do believe that, but also, like you said, he's probably just still going to play, you know, 40% of the snaps. But I think, again, in a must win game, he's their best player.
Get in there, man.
He was getting a lot of the work, right? He's the guy who sat down once it got out of hand. Jamal actually didn't. And so I think it's possible that Swift could be a real difference maker. Again, this game is on FanDuel, you know, or if you're playing Showdown or whatever. And then here's a good example of the double running back skinny stack that we've talked a lot about. Don't really like either of these quarterbacks. DeAndre Swift's best skill set is that of a pass catcher, as is Aaron Jones. Both are, you know, half
Jones Swift. Oh, I love it. Eric. Great. Yeah, that's, yes.
We can't end this season of this show without bringing together one of our favorite little unique pairings. Swift Aaron Jones is kind of probably one of my favorite little skinny stacks.
We should tell him, Dario, that we were so flummoxed by the Packers and the inability to pick anybody on that offense as a run back option last week. We finally settled on Tonyan.
Ah, finally got the Tonyan touchdown.
Well, we talked about him for Remember how much we were going to talk about Marcus Johnson? That was us last week with Tonyan. Just want to get Eric up to speed on that.
Right. But I thought I remembered our takeaway being gross toward Tonyan. And then, of course, then he delivered the touchdown.
No. Go back to the tape. When we talked about the whole scenario where you can go all these weeks without a touchdown, but if he's running the routes and he's running more routes than Mercedes Lewis, it's eventually going to happen.
Yeah.
Come on, Dario.
I don't
remember how much we love Tonyan. Shame.
He did get to four targets last week in a blowout in which they did not throw very much. did get the touchdown, 3 catches for 52 yards and a touchdown, 62% of snaps, obviously probably a little bit skewed by, they won 41-17 and 7 of those Vikings points were at the very end.
And Kenyon was the lead scorer with 41 points scored, and Aaron Rodgers failed again to get to 20 fantasy points.
Yeah, shocker, Aaron Rodgers. But I think Kenyon, you know, we like to get into the obscure, and this game is definitely obscure because it's not even on DraftKings. Kenyon seems pretty cool to me. Like, this game has a bunch of guys, I think, that are pretty darn interesting for tournaments. Like, if I were winning a tournament heading into right, because FanDuel included this in their main GPPs, right? I guess as they couldn't figure out the scheduling stuff. typical FanDuel. All the Packers and Lions are like, I would not want to head in without exposure to this game, let's just say. Like, even if I was sitting in first, I would not feel good because this game looks like, no matter what, right, even if Lions aren't playing for something, a lot of juice in this game all the way down to the big
and it's Bob the team. highest total on the slate too. It's like,
oh yeah,
when you look at the odds this weekend, it's not even close. This game is like by far the most explosive.
Yeah, Swift Tunyon, baby,
love it. All right, for the final time of the season until the 2023 season kicks off, we have to wrap up the show with the conviction take that is going to win tournaments. This feels way tougher. I'm always like trying to think about what mine is going to be. And holy cow, this week 18 feels really tough. But Dario, you kick us off. What is the one thing that people need to have in their tournament lineups to win in the final regular season week of 2022/2023?
Well, since I got to go first, I think I'll take the easy one off the board. And that is, of course, Joe Burrow and the Bengals stacks.
God,
I mean,
damn it.
It's like, I was like, I knew we were all thinking it because there's not much else that we were excited about in this slate. And I think like everything is pointing in the right direction for Burrow. You can play Chase, Higgins, Boyd, Hurst, play two or three out of those four guys and just roll with it. Like they're in a good matchup. They're clicking on all cylinders. And yeah, that's it for Burrow.
I am going to double down on Tyrod Taylor.
There we go.
Okay. And I think that you could do Tyrod Taylor as this week's Justin Fields. You could do inverted stacks. You could do Taylor with Devontae Smith. Like Taylor, Devontae Smith, Goddard, for example. It'd be just fine. So that's an interesting option. I think what you're going to find, though, is from that game, we talked about the Higgins-Andrews double stacks, the Higgins-Andrews skinny stacks, excuse me. So I think you're going to do a lot of skinny stacking where they're going to take two guys from the same game, but you know, with a lot of Burrow, and then you're sprinkling in some of these interesting options otherwise where you know the guy has mobility, you know the guy is going to be playing, maybe getting some garbage time. When we actually took a step back, Taylor checks a lot of boxes, and we've done the inverted stack thing successfully with Fields. And so I would say you could easily see a lineup built with Taylor, Eagles receivers, and Andrews and Higgins. And then you fill in the rest of what we've said, but I think that would be an interesting construction that is, you could even use it in cash.
I love it. And then I'm going to add in kind of filling the gaps between what both of these two filled out the majority of your lineup, except the tight end position. I'm going to give you have two tight ends. You don't need to worry about the rest of the slate. Mark Andrews and Trey McBride. X everybody else out in the teams that don't have Andrews. Maybe you don't have a run back to your Bengals stacks, or you play J.K. Dobbins at the running back spot. In your non-Andrews teams, you're rocking with Trey McBride. I really don't understand why he projects to be 2% owned, to be totally honest.
Get him.
You can pair him with Niners guys. You can leave him a standalone tight end as well. But I think if you focus in at tight end there, you focus in on the stacks and the kind of skinny stacks that these two guys have put together, you're going to have a pretty damn good portfolio come week 18.
Oh, yeah.
We've run a little long, but that's to be expected on the final week of the season. I personally have had a absolute pleasure working with you two and getting to know you two guys over the course of the entire season. We will not be back for the playoff rounds. I don't think we need to talk a lot of game stacks when there's only like two games on some of the slates, but we will be back next year, hopefully to continue the show. And I hope you guys have had a little bit of fun, just like we have along the way. I'll let you guys just say goodbye if you would like to for the last time.
Yeah, of course. It's yeah, likewise, it's been a blast. And I think this is definitely like every week. I know that after this show, I'll have a much better grasp of the slate, just talking it through with you guys and getting sharper. And yet, like you said, it's been a great time getting to know you guys, working with you guys. I mean, obviously, I know Matt fairly well, but the Roto Grinders and everything stuff. So it's been a good time. Thanks for having us.
Thank you to Chris Jimino. Thank you to Steven and all the producers over at Roto Grinders. Dan Bach. This show is his idea. So yeah, really, really appreciate you know, all of the support that Roto Grinders has showed us. Yeah, it's been a true pleasure. It's been a lot of fun. Eric is an amazing host. And I really appreciate Dario carrying me every week because it says analytics at the top. And he makes sure that we put the A+ in analytics.
I love it. All right, guys. Good luck in week 18. And the three of us will see you guys next season. See ya.